sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You're listening to Becky Ivins, broker of Movers Real Estate Company and leader of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team. And per usual, I have with me my team member, Mark Carr. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Becky. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
It's a hot weekend.
We are definitely into the summer here in Oklahoma.
We're headed there. So, and we've got Dean Riddell in person.
Hey, good morning, Becky. How are you?
Good morning, Dean. We brought you in because we've got lots to talk.
That's good.
Do we still get to hear the money, money, money?
Yeah, we will. We will.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, there it is. Thank you, Mike Gannon.
196-895.
There you go. Got the number in and everything. Dean, there's a lot of things out there of people having missed parts of their job, cutting back on hours. And I'm wondering, you know, there is this thing. Last time you were here, we talked about forbearance. Mm-hmm. And forbearance meaning?
Forbearance is meaning of two different ways to look at it. So in the pre-pandemic age, it tied to someone who went through hardship, missed a payment, went on a payment plan. And in that environment, it would impact your credit. Pandemic comes. Forbearance is created by the government that basically gave clients, consumers, a 90-day window. If they tagged forbearance, they could skip the next 3 months' payments. It would not affect their credit. But on payment number four, the back three payments had to be brought up. So it really was kind of a Band-Aid that wasn't a cure-all.
So after you can miss three payments, mm-hmm. it's not going to affect your credit report.
Right.
But on payment number four, you've got to pay payments number one, two, three, and four?
And four.
Wow.
So that was initially when it rolled out. So they've lightened the load now that will allow, because the kicker that affects you and Mark is when it initially rolled out is if they have hit forbearance and say Mark is selling a house to them this weekend. If they're in forbearance at that time, they couldn't buy a house for 12 months. From the termination of that forbearance program.
Really?
Yes. Big deal.
That is a huge deal.
Big deal. So the government has lessened that to now, I mean, the consumer can buy a house, but they're going to have to disclose that, yes, they were in forbearance. They were in the forbearance from this timeline to timeline, never missed a payment. Because, Becky, what was truly happening is Becky would go on to ABC website, whoever your lender was, and you didn't know the ramifications of it, and you would hit forbearance, and it's not like you had a financial hardship. Anyone could hit the forbearance button.
Right.
And so if you hit forbearance and you skipped a payment because you that was afforded to you, then you're bound to not be able to buy a home because you skipped a payment within that forbearance period. So now it's forbearance is okay provided you didn't skip a payment. Take advantage of the forbearance program that was rolled out.
So how is forbearance okay if you didn't take advantage?
It was a Band-Aid, literally. But if you hit forbearance, the regulator said, you can't buy a house for 12 months on payment number four. All back payments are going to be brought current. It's not going to hurt your credit. Then they lighten the load to say, okay, you will be able to buy a house, even if you were in forbearance, provided you were not 30 days late while you're in that forbearance plan.
But forbearance means you're late.
In the old days, yes. In today's pandemic environment, no. It's the forbearance program as a result of the virus that enabled people to be late without affecting their credit.
Okay. Confusing.
Feel confused. So previously, you would hit forbearance, it would pause your payments. For three months.
When you say previously, you mean when the pandemic initially rolled out. Yes.
Right. It would pause, and then at the end of that 3 months, you had to pay the lump sum back.
Correct.
Be back in time. Okay.
Payments number one, two, three, and four.
Right. We're due. So, but now, forbearance, it's still a pause.
It's still a pause. It's
still 3 months.
Still 3 months.
Then does it just begin again? Like you start payments on that fourth month?
On the fourth month, no, you still have to capture the back three.
You still have to pay the back three.
Yes.
Okay. But you don't have to wait a year to purchase another property. Is that correct?
Provided you were not 30 days late within that forbearance period.
Okay.
Which it kind of contradicts itself if you think about it.
Right.
Well, it does because if you're in forbearance not making any payments, how could you be late?
Well, there are six clients that that hit the forbearance button who honestly said, I don't have financial problems. I just thought it was an opportunity for me to skip 3 months' payments.
They did it because it was available.
It was available, not knowing the ramifications, who have not missed a payment. Right. So they're paying, they're in forbearance by definition because they hit the button, but they're also making their payments on time.
Wow.
But so even though they're in forbearance, they're still making their payments?
Yes.
Well, why would they do that?
Yeah, I know. They know that relief is there. If they didn't have the monies, then they're not bound to do so because they took advantage of the program that was provided, which was the forbearance program.
Wow. We've had a lot of programs provided, and I want to tell you, very few, anybody that's applied for that PPP, that is, I mean, that rolled out finally, but for a week, every single day, there was a new application for that program.
Right.
It changed every single day. And then, so finally, people kind of started getting their PPP money. But the SBA money, the EIDL loans, Economic Injury Disaster Loan, I've got a couple family members that own businesses. They applied for that the very first day. Still have heard not one word.
Wow.
Not one word on that.
See, and that was my comment when the mortgage lending forbearance rolled out, is this really wasn't a solution. It didn't provide, you know, in the old days, Becky, you and I have done this forever. If you skip three payments, you had the ability, I'm going to add those to the end of the loan.
Right, well, capitalize at the end of the
loan. And your government loans don't allow you to do that.
Right.
Your conventional loans, you have a little bit of play, but that becomes a modification, not a forbearance. So when the forbearance program initially rolled out, it was like a Band-Aid that made everyone feel good, that really wasn't the answer to do anything.
You know, I don't think you can get forbearance on a HARP.
No, I don't think so either.
Went out to a listing, and the people, they told me they had a 40-year mortgage. Of course, that was a red flag. That just means they were behind, and they got on that Home Affordable Refinance Act, right? Or refinance program.
Program, which is HARP, which you said HARP.
Yep.
Yep.
And so, great program at the time, but again, people don't know the ramifications of it. And Becky, that's where you, Mark, and I have got to be totally transparent, educational. People need resources. They need to understand the good and the bad and the ugly before they hit yes.
Of the difference between like loan modification versus forbearance.
Loan modification is basically you're modifying the terms of the note that matures in December of 23. It's now going to be March of 24, you know, because you're recasting those back three payments to the end of the loan.
Yeah.
Which typically captures that interest as well.
And when we say the government, what do we really mean? The government says they're not going to do that. You can go into forbearance.
I mean, it's all the federal regulations, which are the governing bodies of Fannie, Freddie, FHA.
And what is Fannie, Freddie, and FHA?
They're government service agencies.
Okay. So it's Fannie Mae, which stands for?
Federal National Mortgage Association.
And Freddie Mac?
Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation.
There you go. And FHA?
Federal Housing Administration.
All right, listeners, this is going to be on your quiz for tomorrow.
So pay attention here. So they're servicers for residential mortgages.
That we have to follow their regulations, their guidance. We'll touch on self-employment here in a minute. But they dictate the rules for every lender out there outside of your lenders that try to portfolio a loan or two. You know, when I say portfolio, they don't conform to Fannie, Freddie, FHA regulations. So the bank will keep the loan in-house. We've heard that before.
Right.
They keep it in-house. Well, in-house means it doesn't conform to Fannie, Freddie regulations. So the bank's going to rate maybe higher and the bank's going to own that loan itself, adverse to Fannie or Freddie.
And most banks do not have the money to own loans
to
themselves
own loans.
For mortgages.
Yeah.
So, so we covered Fannie, Freddie, FHA. You want to know what Ginnie Mae is? Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. I appreciate that you came back to listen to it because we're determining what Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, FHA, and Ginnie Mae are. And I am here with Mark Carr. Mark, you're a member of my team?
Yep. I have two roles, Director of Operations and also a buyer agent. And love being a part of the team.
You're working with several buyers right now.
I am. It is a really busy time and fun with buyers. And it's a, you know, there's, I get questioned all the time of what's happening in the market and is it a good market, bad market? It's like, it's a great market. Mm-hmm. And
right.
It just depends on what you want, information you want to know. Mm-hmm. And especially if you are looking to sell a house right now, holy cow.
Well, no, it's a bad market. It's a bad market if you're looking to buy $140,000 to $160,000 house right now because. There aren't any on the market.
Yes.
So
it is right.
Our inventory is very
low, and so especially at certain price points.
So what do we do when inventory gets low? We start calling our clients that we've sold 10 years ago.
Yes.
And say, you guys ready to sell?
Mm-hmm.
We start looking at neighborhoods where they have about 50% equity in their property. And call them.
Yeah.
We can go knock on doors and leave a little hanger and say, if you want to sell your house, we are here to help you. I mean, we don't just sit on twiddle our thumbs and wait for the business to come to us.
Right. There's kind of two different styles of real estate. You can sit back and wait for somebody to raise their hand and say, help me in real estate. Or you can go out and locate people who need real estate help. And we do both.
It's the last thing we do at a closing, always. By the way, who else do you know?
Who else do you know that we can
help? That's getting ready to sell a house or buy a house. So
I got a question for you.
Okay.
I have a customer that moved here. So part of my question is how creative are people being today on writing offers? So I had a customer moving back here from Colorado who is selling his home in Colorado, and the appreciation is ridiculous compared to Oklahoma. I mean, it really is. I mean, his value jumped $80,000 in 18 months. But he said the offer he received was, I want to pay $5,000 more than what it's listed for, and should it not appraise, and the buyer of his home put this in the contract, that I will pay $3,000 in excess of what the home appraises for. And it's an inventory issue. The buyer wanted the home. He's willing to kind of go outside the box to do anything he could to secure that home.
An appraisal acceleration clause.
Okay.
And the Real Estate Commission, by the way, the Oklahoma Real Estate Commission hates those because they're very confusing to the public. And Oklahoma Real Estate Commission's job is to protect the public.
Right.
And so anything that we do that gets that creative kind of raises an eyebrow over there. We're straightforward in our office, and there's a lot of good realtors out there that are just straightforward, but you start messing around with acceleration clauses, and it can get how can you prove that you had an offer that was $5,000 more than it appraised for? You can't. You have to take someone at their word because the Oklahoma Real Estate Commission tells us that we have to be confidential. We cannot release information about somebody's offer to another party. So you have to be really careful to abide within the law there.
Absolutely.
And we get creative stuff. And sometimes, I mean, just today I was writing something very creative. And I'm not going to discuss it. Maybe next week I can if it gets accepted. I'm not giving my competitors out there any little heads up on it. But we talk in our office all the time about how do you get an a multiple offer accepted? How do you get yours to win over there's six offers on this property. Everybody bids above list price except one FHA buyer that wants you to pay their closing costs that doesn't – their realtor doesn't have a clue.
Right.
most of them know it's going to – that it's going to sell for more money. So how do you position yourself, your client, to get theirs accepted over these other five?
Right.
Well, there are several ways we can do that. Can you think of one, Mark?
Yeah, so there are several ways. There are several negotiation parts of how quickly you can close.
Sometimes closing quick matters. Is a big point.
Yeah.
But some people don't want to close as
or
quickly.
Or some delay.
Yes.
It is you have that conversation, and as a professional, you're bringing your opinion to this is what will help this deal, the timing of it, the earnest money that you're putting down on it, the are you asking for anything else? Oh, absolutely.
I agree.
Right. Because, we talk to our buyers that think about it from the aspect of the seller, that if you have a low earnest of money down, that means up till the day of that closing, you can walk away from the contract for as little as $500 with that seller.
As the listing agent, I would never advise my client to accept a cheap earnest
such a
money.
Low
So what's a good number in your eyes?
Well, NAR used to have the suggestion of 2% of the purchase price. Well, in the Northeast, it's 10% of the purchase price. It's real customary.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
In our area, 1% of the purchase price is typically considered adequate earnest money.
Seems like I see a lot of 500 and 750.
Yeah.
Regardless of purchase price, it's a common number. I'll see the $1,000.
That's exhausting to me because to think that everybody, the seller takes their house off the market.
I agree.
Doesn't show it to anybody else. And then they pay for inspections on the property. Then the seller won't fix something, and everybody decides to bust out on this contract. Well, if you do it in the inspection period, that's okay because everyone should be prepared during that inspection period to be able to bust out of a contract. But the house across the street that you really wanted to buy goes on the market the day before closing, and for $500, you can just walk away. Just walk away. And the seller's already moved all their stuff to the rental, the three-month rental, because their new house wasn't built or whatever their circumstance is. They've taken all the pictures off the wall. Yeah. They've discontinued their utilities. And you can just call the day of closing and say, I'm going to relinquish my earnest money. I'm not going to close. Yeah. Well, $500, people will lose $500 pretty easily. They're not going to lose $2,500 quite as easily.
Right.
So the earnest money kind of matters, the amount of earnest money. So that makes the offer stronger. When you were saying, Mark, the closing date, well, often we put a closing date between, say, June 30th and August 15th, seller's choice. And let that be a strong point for the seller. If they want to close early, late, whatever, we're prepared. And that will make our offer stronger because it happens when the seller wants to do it. And then closing cost. Well, find some money. Find somebody, as Perry Duncan used to say, do you have anybody that loves you? Find somebody that can give you some closing cost money, and don't ask the seller to pay closing costs. The property you can't always increase because you need $5,000 closing costs doesn't mean that you can sell a $150 house for $155, because if it's priced right, and it should be in today's market, it won't appraise for $155. You need to get full appraisal price out of it without paying closing costs in that hard to get category of houses.
And Becky, that's tough because a lot of people in that market, first time buyers, and they may not have the abundance of money.
That's where you need a really, really good realtor.
I agree. I mean, this is good information for me to help me help people too.
Sure.
Which is why I asked Mark that earnest money question.
You go to Community Action. You go to the first-time home buyers. You go to the Dream Program. There's different programs out there that can help with money.
That's right.
And Mr. Gannon, you're going to take us on the other side of the news, and we're going to come back because we are going to really get into this when we get back with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You are listening to Becky Ivins, broker of Movers Real Estate and leader of the Becky Ivins Real Estate team. And I have with me Mark Carr, who is one of my team members. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
And Dean Riddell with SWBC Mortgage, our man of the hour, who is talking to us and defining things for us in this COVID-19 environment that we're in. And we had talked about Ginnie Mae. Mm-hmm. What is Ginnie Mae?
Government National Mortgage Association. So in essence, from a lending perspective, most buyers don't understand it, don't need to worry about it. But if you have a government loan, FHA, VA, most of them are owned and securitized by Ginnie Mae. So from a lender perspective, Mark Carr has an FHA loan with SWBC. It's securitized. It's owned by Jenny. Mark doesn't make payments for 3 months. This kind of ties into what we're talking about on the forbearance earlier.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So Mark applies for forbearance. Doesn't make payment for 3 months. We, as the lender, have to make that certificate holder whole every month. So we are, in essence, passing through the principal and interest portion to Ginnie Mae every month, regardless if you're making payments or not.
Wow.
So the risk as a lender is higher with a government loan. Why? Because it's owned by Ginnie. Mm-hmm. And the default rates, I'm calling it like it is, default rates on government loans are higher than they are on a conventional loan.
Years ago, my in-laws asked me about investing in Ginnie Mae. What did I think? And I said, well, the G stands for government. I would say no, because government-backed loans are at a higher risk for foreclosure. They're a riskier loan to take for the lender.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're passing through that P&I monthly, regardless if you make payments or not. So
what happens to the escrows on something like
that? You know, I was going to touch base on that earlier with the forbearance. For the people that wait the 3 months, don't make payments, escrows are still due. We're still paying taxes.
So your tax, means is when they balance out that escrow account, usually February or so of the following year,
correct,
your payment's going to go way up because you're going to be behind on escrows.
Correct. So people need to understand. And the last number I saw, I think Monday, was 8.5% of customers are in forbearance right now across the country. 8.5% is the number. And that's a big number.
Wow.
So it touches a lot of the people that it affects are the self-employed people, obviously, because a business is being shut down and loss of revenue. But 8.5% of homeowners are in forbearance plan as of last read on Monday.
Wow. And we're seeing a lot of people have moving from employee status to self-employed during all of this.
Right.
And so a lot of them are into new area with dealing with these financial things as a self-employed.
Self-employed is a different ballgame, Mark, and it's always been a different game a little bit because you can be the most successful self-employed business owner that there is. And most consumers can quote me the timeline, I need to be self-employed 2 years. And I always say that's a piece of it. Then you got to be able to show that you're making income on the tax returns for the 2 years that you've been self-employed.
Right.
So, I mean, there are people who have a lot of money, and I go to their tax returns, guys, and they're showing they make $1,200 a month. Well, and trying to buy a $600,000 house. Why? They make the money.
They just don't pay taxes on it.
They just don't pay taxes on it, Becky. And so, through this COVID-19, I think I mentioned to you, is regulations are tightening up even more so for your self-employed consumer because A, they lost a job. B, their business that they owned for 20 years was shut down. C, if their business is still alive, how viable is it?
Right.
And will they ever recover? So that's where you talked about Fannie and Freddie being the governing body. They're dictating those terms to the lenders. Self-employed buyer will be scrutinized.
Well, they've always been scrutinized, always been some kind of hard, fast rules for them, right?
Raise that bar. It's going to be great.
Okay. It is time for our word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing to help you select the right covering for your house, spot that hail damage on your air conditioner, file your whole insurance claim for you. Robbins Roofing has been in business, to my knowledge, I think about 24, 25
years.
It was
25 years.
It's something like that. And, I mean, they put a few roofs. Not a few. They have put dozens of roofs on for me. They looked up my name in something, and they were going, well, Becky, we have like 93 of them to look through here with with your name.
Was driving earlier in your neighborhood, and how many Robbins Roofing signs are in the neighborhood?
Well, people, when something happens in our neighborhood, here's what the people in my neighborhood are typically older, or we've got two types of people, really old or pretty young and professional. And both of them kind of need advice, and they know that I deal with this a lot, so they call and ask me. They'll go, okay, need a roof. Who should I call? Well, call Larry Robbins, because, and here's the number, 728-3700. So I trust them. You can trust them too. 728-3700, call Robbins Roofing. And our word of the day today is a repeat word, because it's kind of important that we understand this. Forbearance, mortgage forbearance. And forbearance is when your mortgage servicer, that's the company that sends your mortgage statement and manages your loan, or your lender allows you to pause or reduce your payments for a limited time period. And with the COVID-19 environment, it's pretty much automatic that you can have a 3-month forbearance. Now, I know that we went through a bank with some folks recently. Now, it was a commercial loan, though.
It's different.
Okay. If it's a commercial loan, it's just don't make payments for 3 months,
right,
and then keep going.
Right.
And it's capitalized on the end of your loan, mm-hmm, and it's not that big of a deal. Now, you do pay interest, though.
But that may be that private in-house that I was referring to earlier, adverse to something that's sponsored, owned by Fannie Freddie.
Right, and they, of course, commercial stuff is not typically done that way. So forbearance, I just want to be sure that people know what servicer means. And servicer is the company that sends your mortgage statement.
Right.
Okay.
Pays taxes, pays insurance.
Yeah. Okay. And they have to approve your forbearance, or your lender itself has to approve the forbearance.
Or the servicer has to follow the guidance of Fannie and Freddie, whoever owns that loan.
Yeah, there you go.
See, I mean, in a common, I'm going to jump sidetrack real quick. When we close a loan, conventional loan, the question is asking me, do you all keep my loan? Yes, we keep the servicing for your loan. But it'll be owned by Fannie or Freddie. 45 days from now.
And how do you decide whether it's Fannie or Freddie?
It's based on the underwriting engine that we use at the time to approve the loan.
They're a little bit different.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Like on investment properties, I know I like to use Freddie.
Yep.
Because if you put like 25 or 30% down, it's not as much origination cost to get it done, the points and stuff up front.
There are little bells and whistles like that. And debt ratio-wise, Freddie's a little bit more flexible. So if I have someone who Fannie won't do, we can flip it and utilize Freddie Mac's system.
Well, cool. Yeah.
I think when you get in the middle of this alphabet soup of like Freddie Mac, Freddie, Jeannie Mae, having, Dean, I know for myself, having the ability to call you and have a conversation is the critical thing. And I would say that for anyone, that if you get in the midst of this and you're trying to figure it out, call Dean. Give him a call. Because you sit down with people all the time. And
well, where
talk
would
to
you
them.
Possibly find Dean's number, Mark?
Well, you can go to BeckyIvins.com. That is with I-V-I-N-S.
Yes, I always say I could only afford one vowel for my last name, so I use it twice.
If you have any questions about it, go to BeckyIvins.com. Click on favorites. All the people that we talk about and questions we get. It's our most highly traveled web page that we have, and it'll show you all the different people that we use.
And yeah. And that's exactly what it is. It's not somebody I'm going to recommend. You go down a slippery slope when you start recommending people. I'm not going to steer you one direction or another. What I'm going to do is tell you the people that I use for those various businesses. Right. And where did my home loan come from? SWBC Mortgage. To call Dean, it's 858-7770. And we're going to return in a minute with Smoking Hot Deals right here on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, and I thank you for listening to us, by the way. Dean Riddell is here and from SWBC Mortgage. And Dean, we're going to talk about short sales and foreclosures because we're going to be seeing those more as, like you said, 8.5% of people are
in forbearance
already, not making payments
right.
on their loan with approval of their lender.
Right.
But they're not making payments right now. So when it comes time to start making payments and they're still unemployed, we're going to start seeing some foreclosures, some short sales. And so I want to talk about that as to exactly what that is and how to go about it. Mark Carr, you went to an educational thing earlier this week.
Yes.
About short sales and foreclosures.
Yeah, we spent a whole day just talking through short sales and understanding them. And because the knowledge is there is probably going to be more of them coming. And so gaining just that knowledge so we'll be sharpened.
Right, for sure. Okay, we're talking about short sales. We haven't been, but we're going to. Short sale. What is a short sale? I mean, people talk about these short sales. And if you're a home buyer wanting to buy your own home, I just wouldn't go for a short sale because sometimes they take months. Sometimes my longest one was 18 months.
Wow.
We had 13 contracts in 18 months, and it never was approved. 13 people spent money on that house waiting for it to be approved. And the short sale was for the estate because the people had deceased.
Wow.
I'm going to the lender. I say, Miss Lady that works at the mortgage company, the seller is dead. They're not going to do this.
Right.
So why would they not do a short sale on this? Does it have to do with the secondary market, the mortgage insurance or something, Dean?
If mortgage insurance applies, but in most, you know, I mean, a lot of cases there is PMI, but in that case, I'm going to clarify too that lender, that servicer, needs to be responsive. But what rules are they following? The rules set forth by Fannie and Freddie.
They were using the rule of the lazy employee. What the rule they were using.
You'll remember this, but back in short sales took off in the 80s.
Okay? Oh yes, they did.
And I mean, let's talk Oklahoma. Oklahoma had a ton of good mortgage companies around in the 80s. They got swallowed up partly by virtue of the collapse that happened with Penn Square. But short sales took off then, and obviously your definition of a short sale is someone owes more than what the home is worth.
When the home sells, it brings short of the money that's going to take to pay off the mortgage.
Correct. And so back in the 80s, as a lender, servicer, we had to justify why do I take a $6,000, and it's not the servicer taking the hit. Keep in mind, that shortfall is Fannie Mae's shortfall, Freddie Mac's shortfall, whoever owns that loan, or the PMI company, should one exist, they have to bless that when Mark went into default, It wasn't self-created. Mm-hmm. You know, I hate to say this, Becky, but it's in lending today, too. Common sense doesn't count. Your client that was deceased, you know, in the old days, that would be responded to because you could pull up to my office and say, Dean, we need to talk. My client, this is their, you know, daughter, they've passed away. We need to do a short sale. And people cared about people. Today, you're dealing with Susie in Ohio who really doesn't care about Becky nor your client.
Right.
But it all gets down to, does it meet Fannie and Freddie requirements to take a short sale? Is there PMI involved? Because everyone hates PMI, but it comes into play with someone who's putting 5% down. It's going to have PMI. Why is that? 5 years down the road, someone goes into default. We have to foreclose a property, which, by the way, you mentioned that. Oklahoma foreclosure is going to take 6 or 7 months. So
right.
There's time where people can still sell before they lose their house.
And people don't get that in order, actually.
Right.
They don't understand. A short sale is prior to a foreclosure.
Right.
If the house is not going to produce enough on a regular market sale, if it's not going to produce enough money to pay off the mortgage, then it's and the lender approves it, that we can sell it short of
right.
or have a short sale.
Right.
Then pre-foreclosure. Let's talk about what is pre-foreclosure.
So, I mean, it's in that pre-foreclosure window, and it's still a short sale, but the definition of a short sale is kind of a pre-foreclosure sale. So it is someone who is 3, 6, 8 months in default, they still adverse to walking away, call Becky, get your home on the market, pursue the short sale, provide the servicer, not the lender, provide the servicer all the documents they need so that they can bless that short sale ever before you get an offer.
There's lots of things to fill out for a short sale.
Is.
But there's also pre-foreclosure where there's equity in the home and
right.
it's not going to fall short
right.
of. I've got one sitting on my desk that the guy died, owes $6,000 on the house, and I can get no cooperation from anybody. And the lender's just going to end up getting that in a foreclosure because I can get no cooperation.
But is there an estate? Is there people
no.
that are in the governing body for the family?
Estranged. Nobody will talk. It's the family.
That's
a dysfunction
of
the family
that's
that really
those,
is yeah. creating that. And so the foreclosure, you have to the mortgage company comes in, goes to court, and does a judicial foreclosure mm-hmm. on the property.
Well, let's talk about timeline real quick on that.
You have to
because
less
it,
than a minute.
If
let's
it's
do
a,
it.
If it's a government loan, it's probably going to be 4 months in default before that foreclosure is initiated. That starts your 6 to 8 month clock. So if
right.
someone's 8 months in default, they still have time to sell their house.
Right. So call because
call.
We can get that done.
Talk.
And then the sheriff's sale is after the foreclosure actually has been completed.
Right.
So, okay, we threw out a lot of letters and numbers. Thank you, Mark, for coming in this morning. And we will see you here next week. Thank you, Dean.
You bet. Thank you.
To find Dean Riddell, always go to BeckyIvins.com and look at Becky's favorites because his name is big and bold on there. So we'll talk to you next week with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK.